I feel like we're about to throw down. Is that what's happening here? Smart speakers, I'm Shane Hewitt, filling in on The Rush. Reverend Michael Corrin joins us here, News Talk 1010 contributor, and John Moore, host of Moore in the Morning, which you can catch weekdays nice and early to start your weekday. Welcome to the show, everybody. Appreciate you being here.
Nice to be here.
Hello.
All right. I didn't think that we were going to go all Eye of the Tiger and throw down here, but I mean, I would be interested in seeing the wrestling match and who wins.
Oh, Michael and I have been cage matching forever.
Forever.
Oh, John, don't tell. Don't.
Don't share your secrets. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to hear some of the perspective on various things that we've got here. The first one that I want to start with was this article. You can see it all with CTV News. It's going to be more of that coming up on 6. There's the video of a staff member making comments towards a scarf. And now I say scarf because I understand it to be the black and white checkered looking scarf that we see many Muslims wear. And I didn't know until this really had came out that it was called a keffiyeh or keffiyeh. People pronounce it differently. And this particular scarf. So this is a learning moment for me. And I think for everybody listening, might recognize the scarf but not understand it. John, can you maybe take it from there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a very traditional scarf in the Arab world, and particularly for Palestinians. It goes back 2,000 years, but it was sort of the almost uniform of Yasser Arafat. I've made the comparison on my show to people who tediously say Barack Hussein Obama. And you say, why do you have to emphasize Hussein? It's like, well, I'm not doing anything. It's just his name. Okay. But you're saying it because you want to scare people about the fact that he has a Muslim name. The keffiyeh is kind of the same thing. People wear the keffiyeh these days to show solidarity with the Palestinian people, but also it becomes a demarker of those who are violently opposed to Israel. And when you say, why are you wearing that? They say, well, it's just a traditional headscarf. It's like, no, it's not really. You've chosen to wear it for a reason. So the quick point for me would be, I'm not a fan of telling people what to wear. I was a huge defender back in the day of turbans in the army and turbans in police forces. Very, very vociferously object to the rules in Quebec about religious demarkers. But at the same time, I think there can be some subtlety about the keffiyeh. And so when it's banned at Queen's Park or when students get a talking to, I think, okay, I get it.
The conversation, Reverend, was a staff member. That's what they say. And the conversation, if you listen to it, basically is, you know, are you sure you want to be judged that way for wearing that piece of clothing? To me, it sort of lands in the realm of, isn't that a parenting conversation, not a school staff member conversation?
Well, first of all, let's talk a little bit about what this actually is. I mean, Islam, by the way, is not 2,000 years old. Islam is it's 7th century. This particular, I mean, I spent quite a lot of time in the Middle East. This particular headgear is not confined to Palestinians, and not all people in the Muslim world wear it at all. It's mainly in Arab areas. There are different colors for different regions. If you wear the wrong color in a certain part of the Palestinian territories, you can be in trouble, whatever your nationality and ethnicity. But as usual, there are people who have adopted it, knowing very little about the situation, very little about the history of Israel and Palestine and Gaza and so on, and it's become a symbol. Now, that's one aspect of it. I mean, people will do what they do. It's not like the turban, which is required by Sikhs. I think that's much more profound. It's become an outward symbol of an inner commitment to world revolution. And I'm afraid I don't take that very seriously when it comes from people who are not Palestinian. However, for a Palestinian, it does mean something. I think the decision at Queen's Park was ludicrous. It was pointlessly provocative, and it was bound to lead to trouble because it's so easy to contradict and break, and then you make yourself a hero. As for the teacher, I don't know enough about it. I've heard what you've heard. Was it a teacher saying, look, just be careful because other people less enlightened might judge you in a certain way? If it was, I can understand why a caring teacher might say that. If it wasn't, if it was, you really shouldn't wear that because then it's something entirely different. Everyone, well, not everyone, but a lot of people are very nervous of saying anything that could be construed as provocative or one-sided right now. Which is why so many people are making mistakes when it comes to Israel-Palestine in the Western world. In Canada, people are being told not to do things when they should be able to. I've said it before, I think the slogan "From the River to the Sea" in itself is not anti-Semitic. However, there is anti-Semitism out there, and I don't think it's being dealt with strongly enough. So this incident, this now will become a major talking point. I wonder if it should.
Well, first of all, I mean, when it comes to a faithful and traditional cultural attire, because some are distinctly different and some are the same, it is one of the most magical, beautiful things about our world today when somebody can live into that. The question that I would ask here is, did this kid wear this always? Do they share the faith, the family lineage, or is it something to protest? Because wouldn't this just be a cultural appropriation conversation if it were the latter, John? Oh.
I mean, you know what? I have a keffiyeh. I don't wear it, but I have one. I think the real test is, did you wear a keffiyeh before October 7th? Because right. If you're only wearing it since October 7th, then it is absolutely a statement. If you have always worn a keffiyeh, then I guess knock yourself out. Like I said, I'm not a big fan of telling people what to wear. I really hate the idea of, you know, I mean, that's right down to, I'll defend a woman's right to wear a burqa if she wants to wear one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I have a lot of friends in the Palestinian diaspora community. I don't know of any, and that's not hyperbole, I don't know of any who wore the keffiyeh before now. I've spent a long time in Israel and Palestine. Lots of people in the Palestinian world don't wear them. Some do. Arafat, I was mentioned earlier, made it iconic. He shaped it into a map of what he referred to as Palestine. He was very careful about it. But no, it is a statement. You see it all over the place now. And there is part of me that does cringe a little when I see another white lefty thinking they understand the whole situation. making a public statement. I mean, they're allowed to do it. Of course they're allowed to do it. I defend their right to do it. But I wonder, really, at what point there is to it.
Well, we don't know that. There's a lot of assumptions going on here. And I think that, I don't mean with you guys, I mean as a society, that we just take and assume that we know what's happening. The history of this land, the history of all of these people is deeply rooted on many, many things. And to take a stand this way or that way, sure, but it's if you're doing it because it's trendy online or you're seeing it on TikTok, that becomes a parenting thing to me, because usually youth, right? And if you see your kid and their behavior changes, is it any different than when you're parenting from the perspective of all of a sudden? I mean, you hear all the time when your child's behavior changes, that's when you've got to be very well aware of it. If your kid all of a sudden starts dressing emo, and just from the perspective of attire we wear, you got to get in front of that and find out and make sure everything's okay and who they're surrounding themselves by. Either one of you can answer. I mean, is that offside of me to consider it just a parenting problem?
We have four children, and I'll never forget the day my oldest son said to me, "Dad, can I not be a Tottenham supporter?" Now, that's a big one. That, you know, that's life changing. Now, I'm not making light of this, but in a way, we're speaking of an issue where in Gaza, people are dying. We're speaking of a time in London just a few days ago, there was an attempt to kidnap an Orthodox Jewish man, put him in the back of the car and drive off with him. These are real situations. A teacher and a student, a pupil at a school, does it really matter that much? I mean, if the teacher stepped over the line, okay, she'll be reprimanded. If he didn't, just get on with it. I know this phrase is overused, but these really are first world problems when what we're actually talking about is a situation that is absolutely dire for so many people.
Yeah, I would agree. Okay, we're going to come back with more here. We've got John Moore, host of Moore in the Morning, Reverend Michael Corin, News Talk 1010 contributor as well. I mean, it is hot for everybody from all angles. It is not easy. And I don't know. I guess find the link, give it a Google, listen to the particular clip, and then everyone can make a decision for themselves, because everybody, I think we all agree, needs to educate themselves more and more and more before we draw quick conclusions. Okay, coming up, TTC may be going on strike. That's not a good thing for anybody, including drivers, cell phones in schools, and more on Smart Speakers. I'm Shane Hewitt. Thank you for being here on The Rush, filling in this week. Smart Speakers. We've got a couple of smart cats here hanging out with us. We've got John Moore from Moore in the Morning, as well as we've got the Rev here as well. Reverend Michael Corin, News Talk 1010 contributor. Canada is topped many things globally from the outside perspective. If you can ever meet other people from other countries, it's really great to ask them the question, hey, is anybody talking about this, about Canada and your country? You'd be surprised about how little. We think the world looks at us and talks about us all the time. They don't. But it seems like we've made a couple of lists, including taxation, at the top of the list. Now, we are being viewed as the capital gains taxes pushed Canada to the, after this last budget this month, to higher in the list of the most taxed countries in the world, the kind of list that I would imagine most people don't want to be on. John Moore, off you go.
Well, I think we've navigated into the territory that is held by a lot of the Scandinavian countries, and we've also done that in terms of spending. You know, we got dental care and a bunch of new programs, and I think we have to ask ourselves some fundamental questions. What is it we want from government? And I find again and again, when you take a look at this particular tax rate, and I think there's been a lot of somewhat panicky hand-wringing. I mean, all the doctors are going to leave Canada. I don't think so. People will have to sell their cottages before halfway through June. I don't think that's going to happen. But I think we do have to ask, okay, so if you do not want to pay taxes like that, then what is it you don't want from government? It's, I have this crazy thing that I talk about on the morning show, which is, what are the services you want? What do they cost? How do we pay for them? And somehow we never have that conversation.
Yeah, I think it's important to bring up population of Denmark, which is higher than us in this taxation rate, is around 6 million people, just about. And then, by the way, in Denmark, if you're from there, you can get graduate and postgraduate educations for free. So I think, John, you're bang on with that when you say, what do you expect from government? Because in Denmark, their taxes are higher, absolutely. But that's what you get in return. Michael Korn.
I've always been uncomfortable with the best. The line, we are the best country. And, you know, every country said, this is the best country to live in. I'm sure some countries don't say that, but a lot of them do. I just give an example of our allegedly socialistic system. Believe it or not, I turned 65 recently.
No way.
And I know, I'm officially old now. And so I think, is it 80 or 90 cents off of a TTC ride? Isn't that amazing? What is it, $3.10, I get about 80 or 90 cents off. To put this in context and perspective, in failing old England, in say London, in most major urban centres, at the age of 60, it's free. You travel on the underground, on the buses, after 9 o'clock or whatever, it's completely free. So we don't have a particularly effective system in that way. Our health services is, I think, admirable, but it's under enormous siege. Things we once took for granted in terms of education are being challenged. So it's not, I don't object to the level of taxation. I'm suspicious of the competence of the application of the money that is gained by taxation. And I think what has happened over the years is that there have been governments in power that haven't had the courage to look at what's really going on at a fundamental level, the size of the bureaucracy, whether we're investing in too much, if the money is spent efficiently. It's going to come home to bite a lot of people. I mean, I think we'd all agree it would be extraordinary if there wasn't a Conservative government federally after the next election. And you'll see a lot of things cut. I mean, for example, public broadcasting and other things we've taken for granted. I hope they don't do this, but I think they probably will. So conservatism is changing internationally. It's no longer that moderate red Toryism. It's now quite free market, libertarian, rather right wing. This applies certainly in the US, but in most of Europe and here. So a lot of these questions, and look, let's be honest here. This is not some objective survey that's taken place. This is very political. There's an agenda here.
Yeah.
And the argument is we're overtaxed. We should pay less taxes. There's too much government. That's going to change a lot of things for a lot of very vulnerable people.
Just to speak to those numbers, I think that's just about 25% the size of government in the last 9 years, and it's about 40% of the economy now. So, I mean, that is a lot, and that's, I think, to Michael's point, John, the efficiency of the dollars hasn't been there to back it up either.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a fiscal conservative. I know most of the people listening right now think I'm some kind of communist, but I'm a fiscal conservative. And so we come back to the basic question. What do you want from your government? And if you're ready to do without the new dental care program, then let's cut that and let's cut that spending. There's all kinds of things we could probably get by on. And the whole gravy train argument, I've never bought into the idea that it's all about waste. It isn't. Most of what we get out of government is based on the people we employ to work for government to do things for us. So fine, you know, make a list of that which you are ready to live without and bring it on. I'm ready to work without dental care, but I'm a spoiled, rotten guy who has enough money to pay for his own dentist.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting when we look at everybody's willing to give it up. It's like when I went to the store with my son and he asked me to buy him something and I said, no problem. We can go get your money and you can buy it. And he said, well, then it's okay. I'm like, so you'll spend my money, not your money. He's like, yeah. You know, if my son can figure it out,
father, are you?
I know if my son can figure it out as a teenager, then that's important one. Well, you know what else makes this list though, about things Canada's really good at. And that's medically assisted suicide. And that number goes up. I think this number is grossly misleading because access to it has been easier, but I will say this, in many places in Canada, getting made is faster than a hip replacement or a knee replacement. That's scary to me, Michael.
Well, I have written about this extensively for British newspapers, and I'm about to do another one. I support very limited assisted dying, tightly controlled, very limited assisted dying. I mean, I've been with too many people at very close to death to not be. I support it. But it's gone so horribly wrong in this country. And we are. You mentioned our reputation abroad. If you speak to a lot of people now, they're using Canada as the example of what can go wrong. I never thought I would say this, but there actually are zealots around this issue who seem to take almost a joy in expanding and extending it. And the consideration for mental health, which I think if the Conservatives are elected, they'll reject that, but to consider mental health as a reason. Anyone who, and I'm sure all of us have known people with mental health issues, this is terrifying. And if you combine that with an underfunded medical system, end-of-life care being reduced, we're looking at a very frightening next few years.
But there's a lot of people that are waiting for replacements of joints that sit there and their health deteriorates for 6 months, a year, 2 years, depending on where those lists land, where you are. And that's a very scary notion, people. This comes an easy way out, John.
I have concerns, and I've written about that in the National Post as well, about assisted death. I think it's worth noting, though, in Canada, it's 4.1% of all deaths are an assisted death. So it's not exactly, you know, running out of control. My concern, though, is, for example, somebody thinks, I'm getting old, I'm going to die, I'd like to leave money for my kids, I don't want to waste it by going to a, you know, residents, therefore I'm going to have assisted death. But then, you know, we also come back to the story that we've told on our show, where I talked to a guy who suffered from extraordinarily severe mental health issues, and he was petitioning for an assisted death. He didn't get it. He killed himself. So, yeah. You know, things like that are worth considering.
It's a very scary notion to be worth more dead than alive. We're out of time, guys. Thank you so much for being here. Michael Corn and John Moore, smart speakers here on News Talk 1010. Other things, we've got more information coming up for you very shortly. TTC strike is possible. Cell phone bans in classrooms. We'll get those touches here at the top of the hour. Plus, coming up next, what about those cell phones? Do you really want them in the classroom? Are these rules enough? Parents, we want your calls to know. How do we stop it? 416-872-1010.